Guys, welcome back to my Flickers of Fear show, on which we talk about good horror movies. So today, so I feel like on a few of my previous reviews, particularly I'm thinking about the one that I did of Unfriended, I kind of said, and I've said this on some of our other shows as well, that I'm not the biggest fan of found footage horror movies. It's not that I, just dismiss them out of hand, like it's like, oh, it's found footage, fuck that. It's not like that, but it's not usually a genre that I seek out unless I've heard a lot about a particular movie being really good. But even having said that, if you ask me to come up with a list of, really, really good found footage movies, I can think of like a whole bunch, like right out the gate. So it's not so much that I'm biased against that subgenre in particular, because like I said, a lot of movies that I really like Lake Mungo or The Bay or something like that, Hell House LLC, Wreck, are found footage. Found footage can be done well, just like any other subgenre. Now, the movie we're talking about today is one that I definitely think is found footage done right. And this is The Taking of Deborah Logan. This came out in 2014. And this was actually the first movie by a dude named Adam Robitel. And he actually went on to do, he did Insidious, The Last Key, like a couple years later. And then he did Escape Room, which actually we saw in the theater and actually didn't really get that good of reviews, but I actually quite enjoyed it. And he also made the sequel to that, which I didn't even know there was one, but okay. And then later, well, I have to see that now too. But he also did, I think he co-wrote one of the Paranormal Activity movies. It was Ghost Dimension. And last I heard, I think he's working with Darren Aronofsky, of all people, for like a Netflix series. So we'll see if that ever comes to pass. That's pretty recently that that news came out. So we'll see how it goes. But there's something really, I mean, this movie. It's kind of like a lot of people compare it to The Last Exorcism, which was also excellent and was also kind of like a found footage movie, because this one, spoiler alert, is kind of a possession story. It does have like a supernatural element to it, but it's kind of more, I want to say, like at least at the beginning, it's more grounded in reality and it's not really grounded so much in, a demon possession or, in a Christian framework, I guess, like a lot of possession movies are. This is one of those movies that has a really, really high, like, critical score, but then the audience scores are kind of mixed. And so most of the reviews, like, on horror sites I saw were really good. Particularly, it's like, this is one of the best found footage movies, of recent years, which I would totally agree with because there's something really, really great and really creepy about this one. But some people didn't like the way that it went from like this kind of grounded, ambiguous sort of thing into like full-on supernatural. And I can see that, but I didn't really mind it. And like I said, even though it is essentially possession, I guess, is what you're talking about. So it's just kind of like another possession found footage movie. I think that it does something different enough that I definitely think it elevates it like over some of the other ones in the genre. Because I know there's a million found footage possession movies. And I'm just saying like The Last Exorcism, which I'll probably get around to reviewing one of these days too, which is also really good, and which a lot of people compare this to. But like I said, it's not really, it's not done in like an exorcist-y, like, this is a Christian demon sort of thing. It is kind of like demonic possession, but not exactly. It has its own kind of mythology. And I think that's like kind of cool. So it does something sort of different. Another thing elevating this, I think, is particularly the two acting performances, which are kind of like at the center of this. Now, Deborah Logan herself is played by Jill Larson. And if you're old like me, you will remember that back in the day, she had a very, very long term. I can't remember how long she was on there, but she was on that soap opera that was on, I think it was on ABC, like back in the day, All My Children. She played Opal on there, which I remember because my grandma used to love that show. So it was like always on when I was growing up. So yeah, so she was, so she's in this movie, like playing like an elderly lady who's suffering from Alzheimer's, and she is great. I mean, her performance in this is just so, it's so fearless. Like, she totally went for it. And I really think, I mean, her being at the center of this really, really kind of is one of the best things about the movie. She's great. I mean, her performance in this is great. I also love the actress playing her daughter, Anne Ramsey, because the relationship between them, there's just so much going on, like, in the relationship between the two of them, that a lot of it's kind of like unspoken, but a lot of it like still comes through, like through their glances and stuff. Anne Ramsey, I think she's best known for Mad About You, but she's been in like a ton of other shit. She was like on a ton of television, a ton of movies. I remember her from The L Word. She was on Dexter, like she was on some episodes of that. So she's been in a shit ton of stuff as well, and she is also great. So I think like the mother-daughter dynamic in this movie is one of the things that really like elevates it kind of above some other movies in this subgenre. So what we have going on in this movie is that it's basically, I guess it's found footage, but it's kind of like a mockumentary kind of thing too, because you have a young woman named Mia, and she is like a PhD student. So she's studying, I'm assuming she's like a medical student or something like that. So she's doing her PhD thesis. She's making a documentary about Alzheimer's disease, and in particular, not only just you know, how Alzheimer's disease like ravages the person who has it, but also how it affects the primary caregiver, like the person that has to take care of them. And so she wants to document a relationship between a caregiver and a person with Alzheimer's, and kind of like you know, get that dynamic. So she's making a documentary. So she comes to this house in Virginia with her film crew, two guys named Gavin and Luis. And initially, it's set up that Sarah, who's the daughter, she has come to this kind of remote house in Virginia where she grew up like a long time ago to care for her mother. Like I said, the relationship between the mother and daughter is not exactly strained, but there's a lot of kind of, I don't know if I'd go as far as to call it like resentment, but you can tell that Deborah, even like the way she dresses, the way she carries herself, she comes across as very proper. Like she's a very, not prim exactly, but she's very polite. There's a, you know, there's a way of doing things, which in a way like makes her being ravaged by Alzheimer's and then something else later on even more tragic. There's a lot of sadness in this movie too, because you can tell that this poor woman, you know, she always wants to look like all put together. She has like her little, you know, all her little crisp, neat clothes and her little pearls and everything. And she just very wants to be very proper. But then this disease, like she doesn't have any control over her own body anymore. And she's like losing control of it. And she's like, you know, running around naked and all this other kind of stuff. She doesn't have any control. And like I said, and that's really sad. And when she's lucid, she's aware that she's doing these things. She's aware that she's losing her memory, that her mind is slipping away from her. So it's like really, really sad. But, you know, that said, it's like her and her daughter, I guess she's never come to terms with the fact, because she's so proper and upright and everything needs to be done a certain way. You know, there are rules. She has never really come to terms with the fact that her daughter is gay. And she acknowledges it, but she's always like takes little digs, you know what I mean? Like about her like masculine clothes and things of that nature. So it's not overt, but you can tell that there's kind of some simmering, a little bit of shit simmering there. That said though, Sarah is actually, she's a great character, because as soon as she basically, I guess she set up this whole thing with this documentary crew, because the documentary crew are paying them like, you know, to be in the documentary. She got a bunch of grant money, and she's going to use it to help keep the house, because I guess the house is in danger of being foreclosed upon because Deborah won't sell it. And also, obviously, to pay some of their, I'm sure, horrendous medical bills. So it's kind of established early on that they really, really need to be in this documentary. And Sarah is the one that has set it up. Now, when the film crew first get there, Mia, who is kind of portrayed, she's not portrayed super negatively, but she is kind of a little bit mercenary in the sense that you don't know if she really, I mean, she has like a character arc into the movie later on, but you don't really get the sense she's like, well, she's just worried about her documentary. She just wants, you know, a subject to document that's going to let her come like into their house, like over, it ends up being like 2 months. You know, where they're in and out, and they're just kind of like, this is gonna let her film all this stuff. And she doesn't really, at first, seem to care about them as people. She's just kind of like, this is my movie, and I'm making this movie about it. And she even does something really shitty, like, early on, where to get Deborah, because Deborah, like, when the crew first shows up, Deborah is starting to have second thoughts, and she's like, I really feel like, you know, this is gonna exploit me, and I don't wanna do it, and all this other stuff. So Mia tries to get her back by saying, oh, my grandfather had Alzheimer's, so this movie is very important to me. But then you find out later on that Mia lied about that. Her grandparents are actually still alive and do not have Alzheimer's. So, you know, like I said, a little bit mercenary. But as it goes on, like, Sarah is able to convince Deborah. It's like, look, we need the money. You're going to lose the house. You know, if we don't participate in this, this is our last shot. So, you know, like a week later, they invite the film crew back. And, you know, the film crew, I presume, are like living there because they're in this room with, you know, with mattresses and stuff. And like I said, again, Deborah, very proper. She's like, you know, boys and girls don't sleep together in this house, even though these are like grown ass people. She's like, so she makes like the two men like sleep in one room. And then, you know, Mia has to stay in another room. They can't stay together. So it's just, so it's that kind of whole situation. So as they're documenting, there's little bits of, you know, Mia kind of, there's not a lot of this, but there's, because the nice thing about this movie, particularly in the found footage subgenre, is that it's not really focused that much on the film crew, which I think was a really good decision and not something you see a lot, because I kind of feel like in found footage, that's kind of the whole point, that, you know, the people that are filming it are kind of like the main characters. This one, not so much. They're in it, but they're kind of like on the periphery. The, you know, the main bulk of the action is concerned with Deborah and Sarah, their relationship and all the crazy shit that's happening. And then the film crew are just kind of like along for the ride because they just happen to be there filming it. So I really kind of like that was a, again, like a little bit of a different take than what you'd normally see in found footage. And that's why I think this works so well, because, you know, it's not focused on them. It's more focused on the main characters. And the two characters, you know, Sarah and Deborah, like, together are great. So Mia kind of, like, talks to him. She's talking about what Alzheimer's is and how, you know, and how it affects the brain. Like, you know, kind of talks about the science behind it. And then talks about how harmful it is for the person having to care for the person with Alzheimer's. And how, you know, tragic and sad it is and everything. And so they kind of go a little bit into that. And then, so they're interviewing Deborah. And at first, she seems like pretty lucid most of the time, but then she kind of like starts forgetting little things like, you know, what's, I painted this bird, what's this bird called, and things like that. And then they're interviewing Sarah. So Deborah is like at first trying to, like I said, she's still mostly lucid while they're interviewing her, and she's kind of trying to downplay it. You know, it's like, oh, you know, I have senior moments sometimes, like I'll toast the bread twice because I forgot that I already toasted it. And then Sarah kind of comes in and goes, yeah, but that one time you left the stove on and like burned half the kitchen down. So, you know, it's a little bit worse than you're like letting on. So she's just kind of like, okay, whatever. So as the story goes on, like I said, her kind of senior moments, if you want to call them that, are getting a little bit more severe. And at first it seems kind of legit, like still stuff that people with Alzheimer's would do. Like the big thing that happens, like the first thing that happens, because mostly it's just like little stuff, like she's kind of wandering around, like she forgot where she was and stuff like that. But then one evening, most of the crew and everybody, like, they hear people, they hear screaming, like, down in the kitchen, and they go down there and find that Deborah is basically threatening Gavin with a knife because she accused him of stealing her spade, which is another thing. She's really into gardening. You'll find out why later on. But so a lot of times they'll go out in the middle of the night and they'll find her like digging in the garden with her spade. So her spade is like very important to her. And she thinks for whatever reason that Gavin stole it. So she's basically threatening to like straight up stab his ass. And, you know, so it's a little alarming. So as it goes on, like I said, it's kind of a thing where, you know, it seems to like progress really quickly, but at first it still seems like, you know, something that people with Alzheimer's would do. Like I said, just like wandering around, like escaping from the, you know, house in the middle of the night. She's like nailing the windows shut. She's like, she seems to think there's an intruder outside, even though like in the motion lights come on, even though there's, doesn't look like there's anybody out there. So at first, but it starts getting worse and worse, at which point Sarah goes to talk to her regular doctor, Dr. Nazir. Dr. Nazir says, you know, I know that I told you that it was going to take like 2 or 3 years to really progress to a point, to this point, but, you know, this now it's like seems like it's really more aggressive and it's like spread way quicker than we thought that it would. So we really need to put her on more medication and, you know, stave this off for as long as possible. At this point, though, something really creepy happens. Because Deborah has started like wandering around at night, like getting out of bed and like going outside and, like I said, climbing out windows and shit like that. So they're afraid she's gonna hurt herself. So they basically put up kind of not hidden cameras, but they put up, you know, cameras like all over the house to kind of keep an eye on her. So there's one in her bedroom, there's one in the hallways and all this other kind of stuff. So they set all that up. And then one night, apparently she goes down to the kitchen and she's like standing in front of the stove. And when Gavin is watching the footage later on, there's a really weird moment. And this actually kind of creeped me out like the first time I saw it. Like little things like this. It's not, I'm not like super into like jump scares or anything like that, but it's just like little shit like this is what creeps me out. So there's footage of her and she's standing in front of the stove, and then all of a sudden, pop, she's like standing on the stove. And Gavin's looking at this going, you guys, there is no skip in the time code. There wasn't a thing where like the camera went off for a second and then she climbed up on the stove. It's like basically she was on the floor, she was on the top of the stove, and we can't really explain that. And Gavin, at this point, who they've kind of established is kind of a believer. He was raised Catholic, and he still, like, seems a little bit religious. So at this point, he's just like, y'all, I think something is going on here besides Alzheimer's, because this is, like, some creepy-ass shit. And but everyone else is just kind of like, no, it just must be some kind of technical glitch or whatever. Now, one night in particular, too, like, after that happens, there's this kind of, I guess, like, when Deborah was younger, her husband died like only like 2 or 3 years into their marriage, like back in the 70s. And so she was kind of forced to raise Sarah all on her own. And what she did was she started her own business doing like, she was a switchboard operator. So she started her own switchboard business and it was very successful. And she, you know, before she kind of started going Alzheimer's, like on the, you know, when they interviewed her, she's like, basically I was the nexus of this whole town. Like she knew all the secrets and she knew everything that was going on because, you know, that's, and she had to like keep her mouth shut, you know, to keep her business going. But she was like actually really good at it. And so she still has her old 1970s vintage switchboard equipment up in the attic. And Sarah says to the crew that it hasn't worked like in a really long time. But one night, they're all awakened by the switchboard making a really, really horrible, like a really loud, like phone ringing sound. And Sarah's sitting there going, you know, how could that be? Like that shit hasn't worked in years. So they go up to the attic and they find Deborah like naked. And she's sitting in front of the switchboard, like just punching it into this one hole. And so they're sitting there, well, you know, who did that belong to? Because they go to talk to the doctor and the doctor's like, well, this is obviously a memory that's bothering her. And maybe if you can figure out like what's at the bottom of it, you know, maybe you can kind of purge her of it and she'll stop like acting so crazy. So they're like, so this hole is like, it's 337 or whatever. So they try to go through like all her, cause they say, you know, like mom's a hoarder, she has everything. And this house is like really, really big and it has like all this attic space. So Sarah's basically like, well, she kept all of her records like from back in the day when she was a switchboard operator. So we just have to find out who that particular phone line belonged to, and maybe we can kind of tease out what's going on. So they find out that line 337 belonged to a dude named Henri Desjardins, who back in the 70s was like a local pediatrician. He had moved from Quebec. Now they also find out that at the time, he was actually, they hadn't convicted him or anything like that, but they actually suspected that he was involved in a series of murders of little girls who had basically been found. They had like these weird like snake things, like snake shapes or whatever, like into their, like carved into their foreheads. And they'd actually been injected with snake venom and had been murdered. There were four of them. And then Desjardins went missing and nobody knew what happened to him for like 30 years. And so there's like an old documentary. It's funny because there's like a documentary within, this was like a different documentary like from the 70s. So they show like parts of that. And I think it's called River Rouge or Rouge River or something like that, where, you know, it's kind of about the murders of these little girls. And then they find out too, and like I said, this is kind of where it goes in a more supernatural direction, that what Desjardins was trying to do, like after they found his house or, you know, the place that he was killing the girls or whatever, they found out that he was trying to do this ritual. I think it was like the Monacan Indian tribe. And he was trying to do this ritual because he was dying of Lou Gehrig's disease and he wanted to essentially like pop his soul out like and put it in another host so he could be immortal. And apparently to do this ritual, you needed to kill 5 girls who were just starting their periods. It was like a blood sacrifice. And so it was a whole like snake eating its tail, like an Ouroboros type of thing. There's a lot of like snake symbology. And so that starts to tie in with other shit that's been happening with Deborah. Not only the fact that she starts kind of growly, like possessy talking, but like in French. And also her skin, she starts to get like these weird like skin infections, and the doctors don't really know what this is, because they're like, look, this is not associated with Alzheimer's, we have no idea what the fuck this is. Like her skin is starting to look like really scaly, and like she starts like pulling pieces of it off, like it's just kind of sloughing off, you know what I mean? So that's kind of like tying in with the whole snake motif, which comes along later on. So as it turned out, so kind of as they go on, they find out that what actually happened to Desjardins was that he had killed those four girls, and then the fifth victim, because there's supposed to be five, like for the ritual to work, the fifth victim was actually supposed to be Sarah when she was a little girl. It was like back in 1976 or whatever. So Deborah and her best friend and neighbor, Harris, like found out about this, and Deborah straight up killed the dude's ass, and then they buried him alive. Like they buried him out in the garden, and then they just like kept mum about it like all these years. But it turned out that because Deborah had developed Alzheimer's and therefore her resistance was weakened, that essentially Desjardins was like taking over her body so he could complete the ritual and, you know, keep on going. So that's what I thought was so great about this, was that even though obviously, you know, Deborah does have Alzheimer's disease, you're not really sure at which point it was just Alzheimer's or when it was like demonic shit. And the sad thing about this too, like I said, this is, if you think about the implications of the story, it's actually really sad too, because as the story goes on and her behavior gets like more and more like a possessed person, she says things and does things which kind of recontextualizes a lot of the stuff that she was doing at the beginning that they thought was just like random weird shit. And it's actually really sad because you realize that she knew what was happening like the whole time and couldn't really convey it to them. You know, like she knew the dude was coming. She knew the dude was, cause she kept doing these paintings with like this dark figure getting closer. She knew who it was. She knew that he was taking over her body and she was like powerless to stop it. And at one point she even tells her friend Harris, like she's in the hospital because she's like fucked herself all up, you know, she tells him to kill her, so she knows what's going on, and that's what's like really really scary about it. She knows that this dude has taken over her body and she can't stop him from doing it, and essentially he's taken over her body because he wants to finish the ritual. So while Deborah is in the hospital, she straight up tries to kidnap this little girl who's like dying of cancer named Kara, and basically is trying to like take her away, and she does that one time, but they actually get the little girl back. But then later on, because Deborah keeps like flipping out and like getting fucking all physically fucked up, she has to keep going back to the hospital, and when she's in the hospital a second time, she essentially like grabs the girl again and like takes her away, like takes her out of the hospital. And at this point they've actually figured out where it is that she's going, because they said, well, Desjardins used to take his victims to this kind of old abandoned mine, and that's where the ritual is supposed to take place. So that's essentially, you know, they know that that's where she's going. So they kind of like confront her at the end there. And I think one of the best things about this, like I had seen, I don't remember if I saw this very famous little scene or sequence prior to me seeing this movie. I thought just I had heard about it, but I don't know if I actually saw it or if I just saw it out of context. But it's so great because, like I said, it's possession, but they're going with like a different mythology. It's essentially she's turning into like this snake demon type thing, but it's also Desjardins. So they go, so the daughter and Mia, I mean, Gavin, like the other guy on the crew, he is fucked off. He was like the only smart one in the bunch, I guess. Like at some point after the supernatural shit starts happening, he's like, yeah, I'm out. And he leaves and doesn't come back. But Mia stays because, as I said, even though she seemed kind of mercenary at the beginning, she does actually develop kind of like, she starts caring about, because, you know, this happens over like the course of 2 months. So she actually does start caring about Sarah and about Deborah and wants to help them. So Sarah and Mia essentially like have to chase Deborah into this mine shaft or compound or whatever to try to get this little girl back, because they know that, you know, she's basically gonna kill her. And there's this just great sequence where they're down in this mine, and you know, there's just a little light or whatever, and Sarah like goes around the corner and shines the flashlight on her mom, and she just gasps, and then Mia comes around the corner, and you basically see Deborah and her jaw is unhinged, like a snake, and she's got this little girl's whole entire head in her mouth, and she's basically like eating her. And it's just such a great, I mean, I think that scene in particular, like out of context, I think that kind of went around like almost as a meme in itself, just because it was such a shocking image. I mean, it was just like something you don't really see. You just turn around and here's this old woman like eating this fucking kid's head, and I was just kind of like, holy shit. So that was just like such a great fucking image. You know, but then they managed to like wrest the girl away, and you know, then her mouth is like really, really big, like a snake mouth, but then she goes back to normal. And so they figure out by talking to this like anthropologist and everything that what they had to do was they had to burn Desjardins' remains, because I guess the remains had been buried in the backyard like all this time, but he had basically possessed Deborah. That's why she was digging in the garden all the time. He had basically possessed her to go and, hey, I need my body back. Like, I need to, you know, dig it up and hide it somewhere. Because it was this whole thing where you had to, like, keep it around. So, I mean, even though he's, like, decomposing and, like, bones and stuff. But so she had actually, like, under his influence, had dug it up and hid it, like, in the attic so that nobody else could get it. Because the only way to get rid of the demon from out of Deborah was basically to burn the corpse. So because they talk to the anthropologist, Sarah and Mia find out this is what they're supposed to do. So they actually do find the body and end up burning it, at which point it seems that the demon has left Deborah. And even though she's killed several people, she actually killed a cop, like the one cop that came in after her. And she wounded several others. Like she has the ability to like spit snake venom and stuff like that too. So she bites people and stuff and gives them, you know, she puts snake venom in their bloodstream. So she fucked up like one cop when she was escaping from the hospital, and then she killed one cop. And there's like all snakes everywhere and shit like that. But, you know, they kind of show at the very end that she didn't get into trouble for doing that, obviously, because she wasn't mentally in her right mind. And they kind of show her leaving the hospital, and she just looks all fucked up and like she's not even in there anymore. So it's really kind of it's really kind of a sad ending, because even though the demon is out of her, I mean, obviously she's not ever going to be right again. It wasn't like, oh, the demon's gone and everything's okay. She still has Alzheimer's and she's still all fucked up, and she's never going to get that back. So they have that. And then they have this nasty little thing at the end where Kara, the girl with cancer that that she tried to eat, they do like a little news segment. It's like, oh, her leukemia went into remission and she's celebrating her 10th birthday. And it's like, so it's like, you know, a feel good story, news story or whatever. And then at the very end, like the news guy is like asking this little girl, hey, what are you going to do in the future and stuff? And she's like, oh, I have plans and they're a secret. And then she looks at the camera like all creepy. You know what I mean? So obviously Desjardins has transferred himself into this little girl. So we'll see what happens from then on. But yeah, so as I said, found footage, not my very favorite subgenre. It's not usually something I would seek out, even though I've seen like a shit ton of good ones. Like I said, I usually prefer mockumentaries. And this is kind of like a mockumentary, but it's also because there are like documentary bits in it because they're making a documentary, but it's also kind of like found footage. It does have a couple of the things that people don't like about found footage. It's like, you know, particularly in the third act, like why would you still keep filming? But like I said, you could say that about any found footage movie, so I'm not going to get all upset about it. And to be honest, like when they're in the mines at the end, like Mia and Sarah, like when they're trying to get the little girl back from Deborah, you know, you could argue that they're using the camera just because it has a light on it, you know what I mean? So she's using the light so they can see where they're going, because they're trying to like, you know, get the girl back and not have Deborah see them and shit like that. So, you know, it's, so I'll allow it. But like I said, the great thing about this is that even though it's found footage, even though it's essentially a possession story, I really do like, one, that they went a different way with the possession mythology, making her like possessed by a dude who was once alive but was trying to like make himself immortal through, you know, a Native American snake ritual, essentially, sacrificial ritual. So I kind of like that they went that angle instead of, you know, just the regular Pazuzu type, you know, biblical demon type thing. So that's kind of cool. And like I said, I think what really, really elevates this one is the two performances, the mother and daughter, at the center of the story, and the fact that the movie focuses on them rather than on the film crew. Like I said, the film crew are in it, but they're kind of just very peripheral. You don't even see them all that much because they're always kind of behind the camera. It's always, the focus is almost always on Deborah and Sarah. And I think that was a great idea. And that was like a great, that's what makes this movie great, is because, particularly because those two women, the acting performances are just phenomenal. You can tell that Deborah, like I said, the woman that plays her, Jill Larson, who, like I said, was most famous for All My Children, the soap opera, she just goes for it. She's fantastic in this. She's simultaneously very sympathetic and also terrifying, but she's not terrifying but she's also, like I said, a really tragic character because she knows that something bad is happening, but she's kind of powerless to stop it. And once you realize, as the movie goes on, once you realize later on that she was actually aware of all this shit happening, but couldn't like communicate it or, to the others, or like couldn't get anybody to help her, you feel like a lot more sympathy toward her. But she's also like really scary at the same time, because there's like some shots of her where she's just like playing a piano and then she like turns her head and she's like super, super creepy looking. And it's just kind of like and she's just like an older lady. She's not, like a monster. She doesn't look like a monster or anything like that. Like, at least not until the end, but just like the way she looks and stuff like that is just really, really creepy. And like the way she delivers some of the lines is really creepy. So it's just really great that they kind of went in that direction. And Anne Ramsey, who plays Sarah, is just so great. You can tell that she's really trying to put a brave face on things. She's very jocular. She's trying to like keep everyone's spirits up and stuff like that. But you can tell that she has a lot of her own pain, that this is really like killing her, like the stress of seeing her mother going through this, of having to care for her mother. They show like a few things, like she's really drinking a lot, like to cope with it. So there's a lot of stuff going on under the surface, like particularly with the relationship between these two, which I think really kind of enriches this movie a lot. And honestly, I mean, however it is you feel about it going like in a blatantly supernatural direction, because I feel like The Last Exorcism, which like I said, a lot of people have compared this to, doesn't really, or it leaves it a lot more ambiguous. This one is very, very obviously goes in a supernatural direction. It takes a while to go there, but it does actually end up being that's what the explanation is. And I know that that kind of like divided some audiences. I did not, it did not bother me. It didn't seem out of like left field or anything like that. I actually quite liked that it went in that direction, because I think I would have been disappointed a little bit if they just kind of left it, oh, well, we don't know if it's Alzheimer's. Normally I like ambiguity, but I didn't mind that it went in a blatantly supernatural direction this time, just because I thought the mythology of it was so cool. And I liked that they tied in like a serial killer and like ritual blood magic and stuff like that. I thought that was like pretty cool. But yeah, so even if you don't like found footage movies, and I know a lot of people don't, this is actually one of the best ones. So if you haven't seen it, you definitely should. And let me know what you thought about the end, because like I said, I know a lot of people were kind of divided over the supernatural aspect. It's like, maybe we should have kept it more, a couple of reviews I said was like, well, I would have liked it better if they'd kept it more ambiguous as to like whether it actually was Alzheimer's or whether she actually was possessed, or maybe if like the daughter was maybe thinking she was possessed because she couldn't deal with the fact that her mother was slipping away from her, which might have been a good angle too. But like I said, I didn't really mind the supernatural stuff. And some of the scenes like later on, like I said, even little things like her like popping up onto the stove and, that great reveal with her like eating the girl's head and stuff like that. It was just like really, really good creepy ass imagery, and I just think that was really well done. I think there was like a really good kind of dread inducing sort of atmosphere through the whole thing, and I think a lot of that was due to the acting. As I said, the two women, like Jill Larson and Anne Ramsey, really like knocked it out of the park, and I love that the movie like focuses on them instead of the film crew. I just thought that was like a really great idea. So like I said, even if you don't like found footage, check this one out. It's actually really, really good, really worth watching. It's just some great imagery and really, really creepy. I really liked it. I think this is maybe, I watched it yesterday for this review. I think this might be the third time that I've seen it, and I kind of like it better each time because I think I pick up more little things, which, that's usually happens with every other movie. But so I think it's on Tubi for free. It was on Shudder, but I don't think it is anymore, at least not in the United States. But like I said, you can watch it on Tubi for free. And I think also you can watch it on Amazon Prime if you have a subscription. I think it's free on there as well. So go check it out and let me know what you thought about it in the comments. And that will do it for the latest Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.